Hello, this is Mark Knopfler here. I'm in the studio.
The first place you could have found Mark Knopfler in dire straits was South London pubs in 1977, nights and weekends, while by day he was an English literature professor. During summer break in 77, they recorded a demo to their song Sultans of Swing, and a London DJ, Charlie Gillette, liked it enough to play it on his BBC weekly show. In spite of Mark's considerable time, effort, and investment being trained as an English professor, it was distracting Mark Knopfler enough away from teaching and toward his dream of making music a career.
Yeah, I was pushing hard. I was teaching then. I was teaching at the time in a college, and which was great for me because I had more money than I ever earned before. Because teaching was, the college was so great. I bought a motorcycle and everything. And I could ride down there and play. And the other thing was I could play at nights. I was playing rockabilly and R&B at nights. I was teaching during the day and playing in a band at night time. But my own songs were pushing real hard. I had a bunch of them by then, and they were pushing hard to be done. And I wanted to have a vehicle to do it. So I made it down, used to make it down to Deptford to see the boys. And we just got a little band going down there, a little four-piece, and just played there for a summer, rehearsed up there. But you really got to want to do it. You've got to. It was a lot of. There's a lot of willpower involved, if you know what I mean. You've really got to want to do it. I keep saying it, but boy, we wanted to do it pretty badly.
Shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime, sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside. In other places, but the horns, they blowing that sound way on down south. Guitar George, he knows all the chords. Mighty strictly rhythm, he doesn't wanna make it cry or sing. If then an old guitar is all he can afford, when he gets up under the lights to play his thing. Saving it up Friday night with the Sultans, with the Sultans of Swing. Platform soul. They don't give a damn about any trumpet playing band. It ain't what they call rock and roll. And the Sultans, yeah, the Sultans, they play Creole.
the Sultans. We are the Sultans of Swing.
Classic Sultans of Swing from Dire Straits' 1978 debut, included on Private Investigations, The Best Of. The song became an international hit, partly because it resembled nothing else at the time, a fresh, distinctive sound at a time when seething raw punk rock and modern cool new wave had purged rock from overblown pretense and slickness. But is the storyline of Sultans of Swing a reporter's narrative or the fiction of Professor Knopfler's imagination?
It's exactly, pretty much exactly as the song says. Just a little pub in South London. Went out there with my brother for a drink and near the place where the hole in the wall where we were living, and there was nobody in the pub except the little band, the Dixieland Jazz Band on the stage, and a bunch of kids playing pool in the corner who weren't the slightest bit interested in the band. So that's it. Because they're playing it to an empty pub, there's something great about the fact that they're just there and they're doing it because they love it. So that's their way of liberating themselves, if you like. That's their way of finding their, getting their kick. And to me, there's whenever I've seen anybody enjoying liberating themselves that way from whatever terrible situation, this terrible little pub that's pretty much empty, something attracts me to it. I'm attracted to it. I like it. I like people that take a minus situation and turn it into a plus situation. When I originally wrote Sultans, the music was completely different. I can't remember what it was now, but they were just straight chords on a National steel guitar. So the tune was different. And when I got my Strat, I started to play the Strat. And because of the tool I was using, the song became something else. So it's an example of, for example, if a songwriter sits down and plays a piano, if he can play a piano, then he'll write a different song than if he sits and plays a Hammond, or if he sits and plays a guitar. The song will be different because of the instrument that he plays. And that's an example of that. Because we had short hair and tight black jeans and everything, and people, we were considered, touring with Talking Heads and everything else, so we were just sort of lumped in with, partly with that too. So and those audiences really liked us as well, so it was... We kind of absorbed it. We just went in along with it. And because it was so stripped down as well, it was a reaction. People saw it as a reaction against the Bostons and the whatevers that were, the alternative thing, which was a sort of a much more comprehensive thing. Because this was just this little, weedy little Fender sound going on, with a little amplifier chugging away at the back. And so it was the stripped-down nature of it, I think, was part of it too, the spareness of the whole thing and the absence of keyboards.
With the second Dire Straits album, 1979's Communique, came a reality check. With no hit single to follow Sultan's, sales of Communique, a remarkably tasty and satisfying album to this day, they paled in comparison to the debut. That can be a very confusing thing to a young band, according to Mark Knopfler.
Well, when you're in the middle of this whole thing, you know, it seems different to you. Some records do better than other records at different places, different times, and at different places in the world. You know, you'll get one record that takes off big time, and I remember Making Movies, which was, I think was the third album, that took off big time in Italy, you know. Why? I don't know. Nobody. But for a while, you know, that was that. So, or something's big in Spain, and this and that's big. And you know, you tend to sort of respond globally in some ways. And there's no rhyme or reason to it. And I think record companies are kind of used to that happening with their people that they've got. You know, that the temperature changes, you know, in different parts of the world at different times.
Thank you.
Up next, he'll reveal how he feels about his music's utility in our everyday lives. I'm Redbeard in the studio with Mark Knopfler, The Best of Dire Straits, Part 1. The original Dire Straits quartet of Mark Knopfler on lead guitar and vocal, his brother David on rhythm guitar, John Ilsley on bass, and Pick Withers on drums, entered the studio for their third album, Making Movies, in midsummer 1980. But after only a month, younger brother David left Dire Straits. Mark Knopfler explains.
Even that, you know, whether touring would suited Dave as much as it suited certainly me and John. So that's part of it too. I think it's the kind of thing where it's horses for courses, you know. And I feel as though in some ways I'm one of the lucky ones because I love to write. And when I'm writing, I feel that enjoyment, you know, I feel that real satisfaction. Sometimes, even when it's not happening, I'd just go, you know, leave it for a while and come back to it, and it just feels right to me. And then when it's recording time, it's one of the highs again in my year. I don't get together with my guys that often. We've been together about 10 years or so now, but it's a high for me. You know, it's an exciting time, and it's something that I'm very much looking forward to all the time as to when we're going to get together again and spend that little time together and be recording. And then when it's time to maybe go and play for people, again, I'm looking forward to that. I feel it doesn't really matter what kind of, what it is. I'm looking forward to getting out and playing for people, and that there's a kind of a sense of that you and the audience are celebrating the fact that you're together at that point, you see. So that makes me pretty lucky. And not everybody has that round peg, round hole kind of thing about them. And some people don't like one aspect of it, or this aspect of it, or that aspect of it. So I feel really fortunate in that sense. You know, it's as a way of life, I feel as though it suits me 100%.
Rich old man, you know he'd call her a dead ringer.
manager for Dire Straits after Englishman Muff Winwood, then Muscle Shoals veteran Barry Beckett with New York soul legend Jerry Wexler on Communique.
It was a great fun time, and I feel, again, really lucky that as well, you know, with Muff, the first album, and with Jerry and Barry, with the great thing about all these people and over all the years that, as it's gone on, you know, is to have had such great engineers working on the records, you know, because these people make you sound better than you are, and it's sort of gone on like that. There was Neil Dorfman later on, and you know, I learned a little bit from all of these people, and I wasn't conscious of trying to learn anything. I'm still not, you know. They're just by being around them a little bit, you pick up little things here and there, and so that got me to a stage where I started to actually enjoy recording, you know, more than I was. And I think that's gone on, where I kind of get more out of it now, just the whole process of trying to get something, you know, a performance recorded. Is it's a lovely little art, you know. I don't know very much about it, and I've tried to kind of keep it that way, and not try and get too in deep into it where it affects, slows down what I'm doing too much. But being lucky enough to work with such good engineers over the years, some of it rubs off, a little bit of it just rubs off here and there, and you learn from all of them, you know. So it's been a great trip.
Next, a remarkable admission of artistic integrity and an audience's ability to recognize it in a massive way. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio with Mark Knopfler for part one of The Best of Dire Straits.
Hello, this is Mark Knopfler here. I'm in the studio.
Thanks, Mark. I'm Redbeard for Private Investigations, The Best of Dire Straits, Part 1. Here's Mark Knopfler.
People want to make songs theirs, and kind of think you should let them to a certain extent. Because it's great when people are using the music to help them to live some way or the other, you know. It doesn't matter on what level. So you've spent time recording it, writing it, recording it, and maybe you'll go out and play it every now and again when you get the chance to play for people, if you like to do that, which I do. But also the songs take on, you know, significance for people because they can, for example, become milestones and road markers in their lives, you know. So people can be conceived by it, they can get married with it, they can mourn people with, they can use it to have to party with people, they use it to dance together, they use it to cook together, to write things, to paint things, to help them rest, to help them refuel, to help them celebrate. And so when you realize that different songs are being used in people's lives, and they tell you they've become theirs, the song has partly become theirs, and so what they think of it is something you don't really want to spoil. I get pleasure from the fact that people use the music to live with.
The tricks of the trade. Maybe he can talk about himself. could talk about the money that he made. Maybe he'd be saying something else. But in communicating, oh, he's gonna come clean. Think what he say, say what he means. Maybe on a Monday he got something to say.
Redbeard in the studio, thanking Mark Knopfler for insights into the music of Dire Straits. You can write to us in the studio. Email to redbeard@inthestudio.net. In the Studio was written this edition by yours truly, Redbeard. Transcription by Jane Carpenter. Theme song by Andy Timmons. In the Studio is produced by Barbarossa Limited. Copyright 2006. All rights reserved.